Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we have some opening remarks and news, after which we have a segment with the DC crew talking about competitive play, and then finally we have some closing remarks.
All right, this is episode 33, and it's a great day. Darknotch and I just talked. He's agreed that we're doubling my pay.
Maybe tripling.
Tripling my pay.
Alex is the fastest editor of all time for podcasts. You see, something that would take me 3 to 4 hours, he can do in 45 minutes. And I think that deserves a higher salary. So he's going to get paid at least
three times. You just said a multiple.
He's going to get paid at least three times what I do for this podcast from now on.
So there's been some news over the weekend. Did you get a chance to watch any of the Varbrug Morghulis stream?
Sadly, I worked all weekend again.
Well, I was basically babysitting all weekend. My wife was working nights, so I had the kid. But I did manage to check in on it every once in a while. Unfortunately, I can't give it the coverage it deserves. But this was extremely good. They had commentators. They had four different camera angles. They had over the shoulder so you could see people's cards in hand that they would switch to or when people were choosing their plots. They had overhead view for the game. You could see the commentators. You could see their beards. That was awesome.
Wow, that sounds excellent. Well, congratulations to them for, you know, doing streaming right.
I do not think we have seen streaming of that caliber in Thrones, period.
I'd love to see hold cards. You know, in poker, how when they draw, you kind of show the cards, and then you could have a virtual hand of each person all the time.
People don't actually watch poker, do they?
I used to watch poker when I was into poker, and I bet Nate watches poker. And if Nate does it, it's
plays
right.
It, playing it fine. I'll play poker.
I will bet you
watch it.
$10. Nate watches poker.
I bet he does, but that doesn't mean I think that people in general watch poker. I think there are a few odd exceptions.
Okay.
People who make their living out of game design may well be exceptions.
5 years ago, poker was an international sensation across the States.
What, till the U.S. shut down the online stuff?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, their televisation was hitting, like, as big as some baseball games.
Well, that's not much of a selling point. To say when that the World something Series that is boring on television is slightly is more or less boring than something else, which is tremendously
people
boring.
Watch golf, so why wouldn't they watch poker?
You were forced to watch a Jays game, weren't you?
I was.
All right.
And it was horrible, and they won, which is great, but man.
So speaking of Varbrug, though, it is also worth giving props to Pontus, who won that tournament with the Stark Maester's Path. He was undefeated all day, undefeated in Swiss, obviously undefeated in the cut. So congratulations. That's the second Stark Maesters we've seen at a European tournament in the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that means anything for future FAQs. That's not really the topic of the episode, though. We'll get into that in a couple weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, because we have an interesting topic today, actually, Alex.
We do, but I've still got a few things before we get into the topic, so let's put that. I know.
All right, I'll wait.
You'll wait. Well, first of all, having said that we got the data from Varbrug, they put it most of it in the annals. They're completing it probably as we speak. Fantastic. Still haven't gotten a full or any data in the annals from British Nationals or the Fleabottom Fricka, so boo.
Yeah, those groups are bad.
But I wanted to talk about something we wound up talking about off-air last week, and that I'm now sort of deciding to do 2.0 related, is you had mentioned that you'd done this in the past of contacting local retailers and asking them if they'd be willing to include like a little card about the gaming meetups or something like that with the product, you know, like with an elastic, a little business card that says, weekly meetings. And I thought that was a really, really good idea.
And so, if you're interested, here's the email address to get a hold of you. You know, Alex Hines or at Quebec AGOT or Quebec AGOT, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you did for 1.0 when you were starting those?
Yep.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I think it's something more people in the meta should consider. When the 2.0 kits come in, talk to a couple local retailers, ask them if they're willing to have a little elastic or this little card. The better it looks, the more likely they are to say yes and say, look, this is so that they can reach out and you know, then they'll become addicted to the product. They'll buy more of it, and I'll make a local meta out of it.
In fact, all my realtors that I talked to had no problem with it as long as I put the cards and the elastics on all the packs.
Well, the stock isn't that big.
It will be
at launch, right? It's going to be much bigger with the launch here, where stores will have 40 or 50 copies.
Yeah, no.
So speaking of 2.0, there was news this week. FFG communicated.
I saw that. They're saying that we're looking at like mid-October for a release?
Which is exactly what we said. Once it hit the boat, we said mid-October. I do think there was a slight faux pas calling the article's title Winter is Coming. I'm like, ah, crap. This is going to be like telling us that
summer is coming, right?
But this is Minnesota, and this is you know, for us in Quebec, yeah, winter is coming. By the time that is hit, there's a decent chance there'll be some snow on the ground.
We had 10 today.
We were at 13, and that's Celsius because Fahrenheit isn't a thing. So
yeah.
They also did – so I really do appreciate them communicating. The end result isn't that surprising. It's the same 6 to 8 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks after it gets on the boat and then a week for shipping. It's what we expected. It's nice to hear them say it. It's also nice of them to say, you know, we're sorry, but these delays are outside of our control. And so here's some of what's coming up next week. By the time you're listening to this, there should be an article by Nate on player archetypes and how that's changed over the years. And the demo decks info will be coming in the next couple of weeks as well.
The only sad thing with this is that there'll be very few chapter packs released for Worlds, so we're probably going to see like a Barra Fealty or Lannister Fealty dominated meta. I think those two decks are probably.
I think Lannister's No Agenda of the ones I've been playing. I mean, maybe
you're right. Yeah,
they haven't been the.
You're actually correct. I think No Agenda Lannister is probably better than the Fealty version, and then Barra Fealty.
I have spent a ridiculous amount of time trying to crack that Barra Fealty list, and I come up with a couple of things maybe we'll talk about next week that are beginning to show some promise in consistently beating Barra Fealty. So I think there's room for the meta to grow. I just think it doesn't have much time to do it.
That's what I mean. And I mean, without extra chapter packs to kind of give it some new cards to push some new concepts, you know, what we're playing with now is basically what we're going to be playing with at Worlds.
I do want to say, so not only did they post that announcement, they also posted on CardGameDB pointing us to that announcement, and then Pipes, the person who did this, answered a couple of questions that people had asked. The current release schedule for the first chapter pack is November, 2nd December, 1st January, 3rd, just like we had said from the release dates, but it's nice to have them reached out. I could see them doing a thing where the first chapter pack is fully spoiled 3-4 weeks before Worlds to include it in the Worlds field.
Sure, chapter pack.
I could see that too. Because they'll probably have it at their center, and they'll have you know, the 200 copies, which isn't that many, that you need to make sure that the max amount of people in the tournament can have it.
Yep.
So that I mean, if they're not thinking about it and they do happen to be listening to us, which, you know, we always hope, then maybe they can consider that. But if they do, they need to give people sort of 3-4 weeks of testing. You know, it's just like an FAQ release. You need to let them know what the cards that are going to be legal are.
Can we talk about what we're going to talk about now, finally?
Yes. Yes, John, you can talk about what you're going to talk about.
Excellent. We are going to be talking about competitive play, and this was all stemmed by a horrible comment that Seth Lowe put on AGOT cards. And we don't talk about the comment a lot in the actual show, but I want to come out right before it and say that we, speaking for both Alex and myself, think that he phrased his comment in a completely negative way, and, you know, bad on him for that. But all that being said, he's come on the show, and not only has he come on, but we have brought back a blast from the past.
Don't spoil it. No, I'll cut this out. No. There's a secret. There's a secret addition.
A secret guest joins us. It would have been two secret guests, which
was two secret guests. I do want to say the topic is not technical, but So if you're a 1.0 player or 2.0 player, you should be able to follow the ideas behind the topic. However, it assumes a lot of prior knowledge of the community. A lot of this was us discussing aspects of the history of the community. We've done casts on those in the past, so we're entirely aware that this is a slightly different way. We're not as explanatory, and we don't pause it to tell you, you know, who this person that they're talking about is. So if you have questions, be sure to ask them in the comments. We'll be happy to fill you in. It is just a slightly different style of cast.
Today we're joined by Little C, who we all know is the love child between Eric Butzloff and Corey Faraday. He's on the cast trying to talk about competitive metas. So, Seth, do you want to tell us about yourself? You've been here before.
Yeah, sure. I play out of DC, which people know who plays in DC now. Aaron, Patrick, Reynolds, who just won Gen Con, Corey, of course. And I've been playing, I don't know, I guess a year and a half now.
So it's might be worth noting that some of this discussion was spawned from a recent decklist that was posted. And there's a lot of comments in there to various natures. But sort of one of the questions that came out of it for me was, what are people considering competitive players? What, for you guys, is a competitive player?
Anybody who goes, if you go to multiple tournaments, I think you are pretty quickly labeled a competitive player. I mean, that's what I would consider a competitive player. If you are regularly going to tournaments, like the first one, maybe your friend drags you. But once you start going, you've gone to two or three store championships. At that point, you are competing.
And John, what would you say is a competitive player?
I agree somewhat with Seth. Like, I travel all the time to go to tournaments. I go to Montreal. I go to New York when I can. I go to Gen Con, like, every year is a ritual. But I go actually to Gen Con every year as a ritual to bond with one of my best friends in the world and to see a bunch of my other really good friends. So I go for different reasons, and I think that actually reduces my competitive level. I think Seth is actually probably a more competitive player than me, because I think if it came down to it, he would always take the absolutely best deck to a tournament. And like this last Gen Con, when I was playing you, Alex, I said, oh, I think this Dragon Pit's one of the best decks, I should take it. And you said you should. And I said, I like playing it, but I feel like it's not my deck, so I'm not going to. So I ended up taking a different deck, which I enjoyed playing more, and I thought it was competitive as well. But to a lesser extent, I don't think Seth would ever do that. I think Seth would always take the better deck. Is that true, Seth?
Definitely. I would definitely, if I really felt like one deck had a better chance for me to win the tournament, that's the deck I would play.
Yeah. See, I like to be competitive, but I also like to be competitive at about the same level as the other people playing the tournament. So I want to go in there and I want to have good games that everyone enjoys, not just me. I think Seth would be happy just demolishing his opponent.
I don't know if I would say that, but I think there's an interesting point in what you're saying, John, which is that you consider the way you look at decks, you are aware that you are choosing a deck when a better deck exists. You don't make an original deck and then think, I think this is the best deck, and just ignore what else is out there. You understand the full scope of the meta and what's out there, and you choose purposely to play something that fits more what you're looking for. But it's not like you're ignorant that a deck next to you might be better.
No, I accept that. In fact, I relish that. I love the idea that I could beat someone with maybe a slightly inferior deck, potentially in a tournament. I love the idea of that, which is probably not a competitive player in its truest sense, right?
Well, does it boil down to what do you like out of an individual game? What is the result that you are looking for from a match against an opponent?
Seth, while we're talking here, I just got a call from one of your parents, and they'd like to join the conversation. So is it okay if we bring them in and ask them their opinion as well?
I guess. I'm not sure what you're – okay.
Yeah, so Eric Butzloff wants to join us.
Add him to the call.
All right, sure.
Yeah. So, Little C, this is
as someone who used to be a competitive player, what does he think?
I actually hear he's coming to Worlds.
Is that right?
I did not know this.
I would be very happily surprised if Eric came to Worlds.
Yeah, well, let's ask him ourselves, because that's what he just told me a few seconds ago.
Najee, baby, is that really you?
Oh, Eric, oh, hey, how's it going?
It is Eric.
Is that Is that the hyena too?
The hyena.
That is Alex.
This is
Alexander
new. I like
Hines.
This. I like this. Now I need a mad laughter.
Man. Long time no speak, gentlemen.
We are so happy to have you on this, Eric.
Well, I was tipped off to the fact that there is some young upstart DC noob who is coming on here to defend some Butzloff-esque foolishness he got himself into on AGOT cards recently, which I had been monitoring with sadistic glee. And so,
sadistic
I don't know.
Glee sounds about right. Maybe so before we start tarring people, I do want to mention Eric Butzloff is one of the very first people that I met in Thrones. He actually set it up so that I could go to Worlds and stay with a DC crew that first year that I went. As a complete noob to Thrones, I have a great deal to thank Eric for. So now the other side of the story.
Wait, I have more to thank Eric for.
I mean,
so Eric Butzloff he's a world champion. He's got like a couple cards out and one still in
the There are no world champions on this cast. Are there any Joust champions?
I hear, yeah, whatever. Talk when you get a card design. I hear that
Seth is the only one on this cast right now without a card design.
I hear, Mr. Hines, that you added yourself to the list last year with a magnificent performance. I think were you in that final Melee game with Kidlet?
I was indeed. I handed him the win to take second. So it was a fantastic game. It was good to. It was one of those games that it was good to have recorded as well. I think it really showed Melee. All four players were in it. It was down to the wire. It was a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that feeling.
And
it is a game of skill.
Nobody got disqualified. So that
yeah, that's happened. Always kind of disappointing. Man, what's with this? There hasn't been a great throne scandal in years.
Ever since you left. You were the king of scandals, and you were my kryptonite. I don't think I ever beat you in a top 16. In fact, I think you knocked me out of three top 16s in World Nationals every year.
It was three, I believe. That does sound right.
Man, yeah, I always beat you in Swiss, but I couldn't beat you in the top 16. It made me cry, Eric.
And all of a sudden, I take my leave, and I hear, wait, what? He's, like, doing well at tournaments and crushing now?
I know. What's up? I got a card design.
Oh, man. I know, it's amazing. So congratulations to the both of you. And I have no idea why you put up with random noobs like Seth, but, you know,
It's mostly because from DC, Corey doesn't show up on podcasts.
Yeah, and, I realize Seth is the only social gateway. It's just the... I mean,
and in fact,
somebody's around.
Every time that we were like, "Oh, we should get Pat Reynolds on. He did really well." And then Pat's like, "I don't do this." And then we talked to Aaron about the deck.
Wait, Pat responded to you?
Yeah, Pat responded to email. Hold on,
he responded to us. I'm not doing this.
He said, "I'm not doing this." So we had to go to Aaron to tell us how Pat did in the tournament. It was.
I mean, Pat. It's no surprise that. So you know, I keep up with things that are going on, obviously. And at Gen Con, it was how many games straight did he win undefeated that day? So Corey, in recent years, in all of his tournament history, has legitimately lost two games.
That's what a claim!
One to Zyler in 2011, and the other to Pat. What do you call him? Pat the Robot Reynolds?
That's correct.
Pat the Robot Reynolds at the North Carolina, the second of two North Carolina regionals in 2013. We knew he was going to be good.
And he is.
Yeah.
So we're talking on the show about competitive players. Competition in general. And Seth was just pointing out that me and him are very different types of competitive players. I want to be competitive, but I want to play a deck that I enjoy, that I think is a little bit maybe janky, something different. And Seth would never play something like that. How about you, Eric? Would you play something like that?
What do we enjoy, Eric?
We?
we enjoy decks that have the synergy. That's the only thing I seek in this game. I don't know what Seth testified to, but every year it's a matter of asking. So recently, you know, in the run-up to Gen Con, I'm asking Corey every, few weeks. Yeah, I haven't been testing with them or anything. I've pretty much totally retired from the game. But I like to check in with these things.
Wait a second, Eric. I hear you might be at Worlds.
I'm deliberating. I mean, the last... tournament of the 1.0 era, the last set of tournaments, it's kind of tempting to make a last showing. I don't know, though. You know, I've tried over the last few years showing up to playtesting sessions with the DC crew, and what happens, Seth can testify to this, typically I show up, I play one game, I get smacked around because I have no idea what I'm doing anymore, and I can't stand the feeling of losing. It's the most bitter, sour-tasting thing
so you
imaginable,
leave.
And so I just end up hanging out and trolling the rest of the time, get bored, and leave early.
So it sounds like you're ready for Melee at Worlds.
Well, Melee, yeah. Oh, that does sound like every Melee game. Good point.
What I was getting at, though, is that I think the philosophy that I got brought up in the DC crew is that we're trying to win. We enjoy winning. When we go to a tournament, it's what can I play to try and win? So if it's original, if it's our deck, if it's their deck, none of those questions are relevant. We're going to play the deck that we think gives us a chance to win. And that's
always
trying to chase that, trying to chase whatever cracks the meta, whatever will win. That's the most fun for us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I got the question confused. I thought that was just necessarily understood. I was taking it a step beyond that.
Fair enough.
If the deck doesn't win most of its games, I don't even know why you're around with it to begin with. But.
Well, I play decks that I think win most of their games, but I don't necessarily think might be the best deck of the meta, and I make that decision consciously when
why?
I go to a tournament. Because I like to have fun, I like to be challenged, and I like to play something different and unique, and not be the 29th person playing Martell Maesters or whatever it is that year, because that's how I have my fun.
Oh, so you don't just get it from winning.
Well, right. that was the question we were just on, was what is the ideal outcome of a match for you guys? And for me, it was, I like that challenge. I like to walk away from the match with a story where I can say, oh, man, I really turned it around, or wow, he pulled this play I didn't expect. I'm guessing the answer for both of you is
5-0. So,
The challenge is trying to beat the field. The challenge is trying to win a tournament. That's the ultimate challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, right? Like, it's the whole process. It's testing with your core crew to painstakingly torture every archetype you can think of to try to find those hidden gems out there that qualify for that rare status of tier one. Then playtesting and refining that deck where every single card is perfect and no card in there is bad. You know, the usual DC process. Take the bad cards out, replace them with the good ones. And, repeat.
It's gonna be so hard in a limited 2.0 core environment. You're gonna be forced to have some bad cards in there.
Yeah, that won't be fun. I mean, I remember the first Worlds where the first Worlds in the LCG cycle, which was my first Worlds in 2009, where there was a core set, there was a cycle of chapter packs, and I don't remember whether or not the Greyjoy cycle was out. Greg won with Greyjoy, it might have been, but it was just so painful, though. There was pretty much Lanny, and then Greg came up with a crazy deck, and then there was, like, nothing else. So, yeah, I would not. If I were to play 2.0, which I find unlikely, but if I were, I would still wait a year or two. But more back to the question, like, for us, it's the process. It's the process of playtesting and pursuing that goal of finding the perfect deck that crushes the meta, and also then practicing with that deck till you're blue in the face so that every matchup that is expected is in line with, you know, this deck versus all of the decks that we think are out there, which, of course, we build and also play the crap out of. You just want it to be automatic at that point. And then showing up to the tournament and feeling that validation. And then occasionally, the best times are, so that's the usual process, right? And then DC shows up. There's an incredible deck. 5 of us play it. Each of us smack everyone else around. And we lose only to each other. And yeah, it's pretty satisfying. Not gonna lie. Occasionally, though,
when it happens, which it doesn't always.
Yeah, well, no, it always happens, but but there are those times when it doesn't, right? When someone shows up with a deck that's unexpected, like Bruno did in 2012, Greg has done multiple times, and all of a sudden you find yourself playing against something that you haven't thought through before, and there's a group learning plot process. You better believe that at the conclusion of every game, DC huddles and shares intelligence on all of what they've seen. And
That is not true.
I guess I can say that too. I really like this one. we're at the, so you know, I'll still show up socially with the guys and hang out. And after this Gen Con, there was the usual outing where everyone comes, and one of the guys in the crew, they're talking about the story where not a Dark Nage. It sounds like you played against one of our newer guys. And he was a little
told
slow
him my whole deck, including my plot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that happened.
And then there was this podcast where you were just like, man, I really shouldn't have done that, but it was probably okay. Of course it wasn't okay. You better believe that he immediately reported back to Corey, who
no,
shared it with
true.
The entire
That's not true.
Right. They can deny it. That's fine. But
all my tricks.
I mean,
right.
John was saying exactly that as soon as he told them, and then he told them he did his huddle with us and a couple of us, and he's like, I just gave my entire deck list to DC.
Right. So you gave up. I mean, please, Seth will deny it. He's an active player, but I brought them up to do nothing less. Corey and I have instilled in them no less than this. So, in any case.
So, in the competitive scene, there's sort of two more questions that emerge. And the first is Thrones competitive? And if the answer is no, then can it even be because of singleton matchups, the fact that it's not best of three, the fact – I mean, you guys approach it as a team, so the odds are that someone rises to the top.
And that's part of the goal.
As an individual, is Thrones competitive? Can it be?
Yes. So you mentioned what you want out of a game, Alex. Mm-hmm. What I want out of a game when I play a game is for skill in deck building and skill in playing as much as possible to determine the winner, even if that means I don't win. What aggravates me is when luck or a rock, paper, scissors meta matchup determine who wins the game instead of who practiced more, who knows it better, who built a better deck. I want there to be a good reason, in my opinion, why someone won or lost. And so I think you can stretch consistent performance across games and across tournaments, and that makes it a competitive game. You can't really stake your desire on winning a single tournament. It's not that exact a science, but it can be a competitive game if you stretch it across a career, like Eric has, or either of you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I would agree, but what do you guys think? I obviously completely agree with that. The closer to chess with probability, but also where, despite variability, results tend towards expected values in the long run.
I think the answer of across multiple games is a good one, but I think there's certain metas, and I think Seth will agree with this, that are just weaker than others. You can go to certain tournaments and the people there play more casually, or they're into more fun than they are competitive, and going there to win is probably the wrong attitude, because to me it's a hollow victory. You go in, you crush those guys that just started
and it feels bad.
Bump wherever. And you're like, yeah, I just won with the best deck in the meta. And you're like, you know what? That was stupid. If I wanted a competitive game out of that meta, I should have showed up with the 10th best deck in the meta or something.
Okay, but
different.
What if they don't
yeah,
think
but that
they're
feels
bad?
Horrible.
What if they think they're good, John? What if they think that they
oh,
are
yeah,
better?
You can't have that. You have to show them. You have to put
no,
them
you
in
don't.
Place.
No, no. What do you mean? Stop. You don't have to go there trying to show them that they think they're better than you, so you have to prove it to them that you crush all their hopes and dreams.
If they don't respect, well, like, if they don't understand the methodology and they don't understand that some cards are better than others, then the best thing you can do for them is demonstrate the truth.
No, that's not true, because what happens is if a guy like you shows up, Seth, and you crush them so utterly that they have no hope
that
of
that doesn't really happen, but okay.
Yeah, that doesn't seem likely.
It could in some metas, trust me.
But so if Patrick Reynolds shows up to a tournament, okay.
Okay, Patrick Reynolds shows up to a tournament, crushes that meta completely with the robot, and then leaves, and they're all like, well, why do I even want to play anymore? Like, why ever play competitive?
No. So,
is how good the real competitive players are. I don't even want to challenge this guy. Look at him. He's a monster.
But we're talking about
it.
I mean, okay, so you've just given one version of a scene where
that's
a competitive, you have, So believe it or not, as villainous as DC plays itself off to be, and as seriously as we take the most serious tournaments, I'll give you an example from, so I mentioned Patrick, North Carolina Regional 2013 beats Corey. He's not part of the crew yet. He still lived in Southern Virginia at the time, but, you know, we had seen him at a few tournaments. We knew this kid was good. There was another North Carolina Regional earlier that year. North Carolina had two regionals that year. It was crazy. And these people had never played before, right? And so we knew one guy down there, Rick Brannigan, went to college in that area, knew some people towards the end of his college experience, would then go on to start playing in local tournaments, and that year they held two. And we showed up as a crew, stayed at Ben Johnson's parents' place the night before, because Ben Johnson is from that area, had amazing barbecue, had a great time. We didn't intend to show up to just crush the locals. What happened the next day is, of course, we show up. We're playing decks that we take very seriously because we don't play bad decks. But it's not like we prepared nearly as hard as we would for Gen Con or a tournament like that. And we also don't play as a team in a situation like that either. Everyone's playing their own decks and we're all trying to kick each other's asses. But throughout, we're really friendly with the locals. I mean, the goal is to show up and, sure, to show off and show what a bunch of really good players look like, to demonstrate to them what competitive play should look like. But that's not quite how we approach it when we're there. We're take-backs are rampant and we're cool with allowing people to think through their moves. And if, you know, they're in the middle of judging something and that we think is going to lead to a bad move, we'll show them
what a better move is.
Wait,
are you trying to claim that you gave some slack to another meta?
That's completely what we... I'm sorry, is DC not about that anymore? Because we tried, back in the day, we tried to make that fairly fun for individuals who are less competitive. I mean, that's how we roll. That's how we still should roll. It's not Gen Con, it doesn't matter. We still won at the end of the day. There were still three of us in the top four. Like,
you guys are missing the point. Like I said in that
I'm just joshing around here.
The decks don't matter.
What? Oh my, wait. What voice did I just hear?
We have a Simone on the cast now.
No,
holy fuck. Are you serious?
The decks only matter after the cut.
This is going to be the best podcast.
So you're
ever.
Saying before the cut, it's all about the player. The best player wins, Simone.
I will never miss a cut. I've never missed a cut at Worlds or Gen Con. It's impossible.
So yeah, that's because record, in that crushed Simone this year pre-cut.
Didn't miss the cut though.
No. No, you didn't.
So 2 points,
John. Was that pretty satisfying?
It was awesome. That was actually game I focused on the most. It was pretty fun.
Yeah,
it was a close game though.
Getting Steve to shut up for like 5 seconds, it's a really good feeling.
So John says, "Hey Seth, want to come on the podcast?" And then now we have four people with champ card designs and one who doesn't.
We have all three versions
man,
of Eric on the podcast
a rumor
right now.
That
all three
might
generations
come on.
Of Eric.
Four champs and a chump.
And secondly, we've gone like 85 episodes without, and we're already at like 3 so far in this episode. So we're off to a pretty good start.
I'm not going to be on that long. I just had to get on to say hi, man. You can cut me out of this if you want, but I want to get on here for the record and say one thing, because it just keeps bothering me, is like people cite like world champions in this Barra Maesters path thread, like about Bruno or Greg having more than 63 cards. Those are just like the dumbest arguments ever. I don't understand why that even matters. As like
yeah,
a argument
it doesn't. Decks could have been tighter. Right. Everyone knows that the perfect deck is 61 cards because it's all about the ratios, but you don't want to be inefficient.
No,
61 cards every time.
Eric, you're so wrong right now.
See, even guys, Steve Simone can be trolled.
I'm so easy to be trolled.
Speaking of this ridiculous thread, hold on. It's like, I just love going through here and see these old names. I haven't been on this website in a while, and it's like everyone's still playing their same roles. You got Seth, who just sort of, you know, took over as Generation 3.0 being a dick. You got Steve backing him up.
I'm going to leave you guys to it. I got one more thing to say for the podcast, is I guarantee you right here on this podcast, I'm coming to Worlds with Vera Black Sails, and I'm beating Alvaro in the finals this year. That's a guarantee.
Oh my God! Don't ever.
I'm coming, and that's all I gotta say.
Talk to me about Vera Black Sails again. I don't ever want to hear that.
All right, pulling things back to the competitive aspect. So when I say is Thrones competitive, I mean there are a lot of other card games that would argue otherwise. I mean, for instance, in that same thread, we're talking about people like Peter Wilson who are moving on to Magic because they don't feel there's that same competitive spirit in Thrones. They don't feel there's that same drive to win, either because of the prizes or because of the attitude of the players or because of the rule set, whatever it is. If you compare it to something like Magic, is Thrones competitive?
Well, FFG has, I mean, no. Part of that has to be necessitated by like what those who hold the tournaments and those who foster the game are pushing it to become, right? And FFG has never wanted this to become a competitive game. They've never supported it competitively. They continue
to. That's not true at all.
Oh please! Like having a world championship, there's still no ranking of any kind. There's still no. Really like the
they
effort they put into highlighting
four tournaments, and they give you buys for other tournaments. You can't argue that they don't try to at least foster some level of competitive scene.
They literally say that in some of their tournaments, take back should be okay. They write that in the rules.
Not only that, but like they continue to introduce these rules that discourage behaviors that, in a game we can all agree is perfectly competitive Magic, are commonplace. I mean, DC has to go out of its way to feign like we're actually playing out games that we're just dumping to each other because we...
I won't hear that kind of talk. That is not true.
Because we play in an environment that is just totally against such behavior. If we played Magic, that's commonplace. You just take a draw with an individual and get in the cut.
That's worth noting. It's an extremely common thing in Magic. You get to your 4-0 record. You draw the next two games, so you're guaranteed the cut. And that's not considered collusion. It's part of their tournament rules. It's extremely common. It's sort of your reward for getting to 4-0.
Right. And it makes – I mean, to those of us who are competitive by nature and want to treat a tournament as a tournament rather than a series of individual games in which everything should be rainbows and unicorns and people should, you know, play as Jamie Lannister would face off against – oh, nothing. I'm just saying they don't have a place in the bloodbath of –
competitive
Thrones
play.
As DC envisions it, right?
You haven't read Winds of Winter yet, have you?
Oh, have you?
No.
Okay.
Magic Gathering actually drove me to Thrones because in Magic, I played in one Magic tournament and I had a game where I couldn't draw any land and I lost. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't function. I love Thrones. I think Thrones is competitive because of the plot deck. I think the plot deck is a great innovation where you have a guaranteed resource every game so that your skill can be demonstrated in every game. I think that makes it competitive.
I mean, I think Thrones, for that reason, is a game that is much more complex in strategy and tactics. I don't know what that has to do with it being more competitive or not. Corey and I grew up, and a few of the people who we considered part of the DC meta, really the DC Wisconsin meta, in its truest form, we grew up with Star Wars CCG made by Decipher Incorporated, which was...
what an amazing game.
Yeah, I could, when I was a completely new player, show up to a shop and play pickup games on the side of a tournament, hand, you know, play against a good player with my dark side deck against their light side deck, get crushed, then hand them my shitty deck, take their good deck, and still get crushed.
Yep.
Guaranteed, 100% of the time. Not 100%, but like 95%. It was as
that
close
game is
to
the ultimate thought-provoking game, though.
Like, it was. And so we loved it. And so when Star Wars dried up and the alternatives were Magic or Lord of the Rings, it was, you know, slim pickings and I just got out of CCGs for a while. That strategic complexity that I'd grown to love was not to be found and I was totally unsatisfied. And Thrones was the only thing years later that really offered something close. It's nowhere near that level, but it's good enough.
I'd like to ask you guys a question. I want to get your opinion. There's a theme in that AGOT cards decklist thread of people questioning whether certain cards are really worse than other cards or whether it's just
identical.
And the second one being, can you by being original, is it worth playing bad cards to be original and surprise other players? Like, can you just strive for the best 60-card decks? Is there a right answer for some deck archetypes? Or is it like, every player, what works best for him kind of thing?
Okay, is there a right answer to some 60-card deck archetypes? Of course, there are answer cards. Is it worth playing them in a major event where you're going to see a whole bunch of other deck and different archetypes?
I mean, he's not talking about
silver bullets.
Is there a correct way to build a certain deck archetype, filling 60 cards, choosing the right ones, or is it like kind of to each his own choice?
Well, yes, and so yes, except that it's extremely dependent on the event. I mean, you could very well argue...
Reading the meta right.
Exactly. Sure. Reading the meta correctly is a huge difference. So at some point, you know, you test a deck and you say, you know, this card isn't as good, but I'm expecting 40, 50% Martell, and this card wins my Martell matchups for me.
Ascension, for example.
Exactly. Or
it's a good card on its own, but it's better against sales, Martell.
We decided we needed, like, two or three copies of Mirror and Mirror, that was the Martell matchup. It made the difference for us, and we expected a lot of Martell. Running triplicates of a character that isn't that fantastic is not objectively better, but within the meta that we expected, it was objectively better. So you can make that same case. You know, if you expect nobody to run Valor, maybe Stoic Resolve is not the right call.
I can't comment on the foolishness of playing two or three Mirror Mirrors in a deck. but I will say that the idea of guessing a meta is used as an excuse far too often for just putting bad cards in decks.
Like, I would agree.
Let me put these cards that are just not very good in my deck. Like I'll put Ygritte in my deck where it doesn't really fit or combo with anything. Oh, but because there are some other cards out there right now, it's okay. Like, let me put a bad card in, and because there's lots of X or Y, it's justified.
I agree with you somewhat, Seth. I like to say that I agree that some decks will have what you would consider a bad card because it isn't optimized. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. Like, some people don't have the time to do proper testing or, you know, find out what those bad cards
are. That's fine. Just don't claim that. I mean, you understand my point.
I see what you're saying. I would agree. I mean,
and some people accept it. Like, I play some bad cards because I like them. But I know they're bad cards.
That's the worst. That's just
because I like them.
Fishmonger Square, Eric. It's an awesome card.
Oh, I can't.
Alex makes us put it in the decks, and I play them for him. You know? He loves them. I don't know why, but
Alex makes you put bad cards in the deck.
Yeah, because he likes the card.
Yeah,
and I comply. I'm just not competitive, probably at the same level as Seth is.
And yet you seem so much to enjoy winning.
I love winning. I love winning better if my Fishmonger Scare holds your face, though, Seth.
Akash is actually the most competitive player there is. He's starting his World Championship Melee campaign right now.
Hey, that's a wise man. I mean, realistically, it should have started years ago, because that's what it takes. But if you can't roll in with a crew of 10 guys who took a blood oath in secret the hour before, well,
to get disqualified.
You got
to
solo that, yeah.
I just think, Alex, you're coming to ask a question. Is this a competitive game? I think one of the benefits of being a more competitive game as opposed to a less competitive game is that we get better designed cards, we get a more demanding community, and I think it's an important perspective to have on the game as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, at least for those of us in the DC meta, right, it would be more satisfying to show up to tournaments and be challenged more often by more players and more games. The game, I mean, as the player base has grown, it seemed to become slightly more competitive over time, but not by much.
Not by a huge amount, but how can we make it more competitive? Because, I mean, this all came about from your comment on a deck list, and I know that your goal there, Seth, was to say, you know, step it up, become more competitive. But you did it.
At least a third of him just wanted to be a dick. I know. I used to post in exactly this way. I can break the motives down for you.
Yeah, but Eric, you also linked a website as your signature that listed every regional win, store championship win, or
come on,
every top 16 I used to was ever in.
Come on,
top 16.
That?
I can find that website for you.
We're going to find that website.
Oh, give me a link to that.
Is that real? Wow. Someone go on the Wayback Machine and find this right
now.
That's
embarrassing.
John will definitely find
it. You had every top 16 match DC was ever in. It was your personal website, actually,
it
Eric.
It was a bad website, too.
You could search on Eric Butzlaw.
Black background.
Oh. Oh, yeah, that was... Oh, man.
Oh, okay, we're admitting to it now, so that's good.
But that's the first step.
I'm not going to lie, that's embarrassing. That is just...
Embarrassing, but true.
That's rather self-serving. Worse, at some point, you know, like, Dennis would be like, oh, well, you haven't updated it yet. Why am I... Oh my God. What are we doing here, people?
So John brings on a valid point. If as Seth says, the more competitive the meta, the better designed cards we get, the more demanding we can be of the designers, and I agree with all that, then surely we should be making an effort to raise the general standard of competitive play. And some of the aspects that have traditionally done this are things like sharing decks, tournament reports, things like the annals, ways of sharing the information so the meta changes faster, reaches optimal strategies earlier, so that you're playing against players who are playing better decks, because they've, regardless of whether they net deck them or whatever, then you're challenged to come up with answers to what was previously the best on a faster pace. Well, the alternative of keeping a deck secret, for instance, means you can just continue to play that deck for as long as the meta allows it.
And also, and if you don't let others approve, you're never going to actually feel that your opponents are competitive because you're holding the knowledge, you're securing it. You know, that's why Alex and I try to say, you know, you should be using these, your setup analyzers. You should be taking a look at the annals to see what the meta's like. You should be bringing a really good deck to these major events, nationals.
Seth, are you feeling like there's some sort of judgment that's about to be cast upon us?
Here it is. It's happening. Why doesn't DC ever share their decks?
2011. It was spring. The deck was Martell. Beginning of regional season. The DC meta holds the first regional that year. That was really... I don't know if there were other ones. It didn't matter if they were. We have a very competitive regional, surprisingly. Jonathan Benton brings the Tennessee crew over, and
Eric's telling a story again. I'm going to get a beer, gentlemen.
I was sweating bullets. I think he beat me in the last round of the Swiss, and I just edged him out in the final. And it was a very satisfying tournament, right? Jonathan Benton, very strong player, came up with something that we hadn't completely tested against. It was great. For some ungodly reason, I don't know why, it was me and Dan Ock, we deliberated and we're like, what the hell? Let's just throw the deck list for this tournament online, it'd be great. Wouldn't you believe it? Every regional for the remainder of the season, here I am playing against my damned broken Martell deck. Time and time again, it was so annoying. Then some regional in California happens, and some randos end up playing the same deck, but not giving props to the DC meta when they do well with it. And if you haven't noticed, that really gets under our skin. 2010, it's just after the regional season, which
was
a lighter
regional.
Telling
another story. I have to cut you.
Shut up. No, stop. Go away. No. I'm going to tell the region why you... I'm going to give the reasons why you inherited this culture of strict secrecy. 2010, post-regional season, this friend of ours, Alec Irwin, comes to me and says, you know what, I like playing the game, but my meta is not super competitive like you guys are. You spanked us all year with this Lanny deck. I have a lot of respect. Could we like share deck lists or something? And here we are, we're prepping for Worlds, which was at Gen Con that year. We're talking about the era of the 6 max Night's Watch Wildling agendas.
You played Targ that year, yes.
Played Targ with 5 agendas. I think Greg played Martell with 4, Matt played Martell with 3 maybe. Corey and I test the crap. Well, let's go back before that, though. So it's the end of the regional season. We know we're not going to play the Lannister deck that we crushed regionals with. And so I'm like, well, okay, you know, you want to see what a real deck looks like. I'm just going to give you this Lannister list, Alec. He takes it. There we're going, testing for Worlds over and over again. I played at least 100 games with that Targ deck against every conceivable thing. We knew what the meta would look like. We knew that the only thing it ever lost to at all was Lanny, which was in fortunate, but we also expected very few players to play Lanny. there in the Swiss tournament, in the semifinal, as I had gone whatever it was at that point, 8-0 that day, the best I ever felt with a deck, just every game was a blowout, except for against, what's-his-face, Daryl from Missouri, who still likes to recount how he noobed that game up and could have knocked me out in the first round. But there I am in the semifinal, sitting across from Alec, who is playing the Lanny deck I handed to him, which is supposed to be expired, which shouldn't have risen to the top of the tournament, because there was lots of Stark in the field, whatever, but he was able to navigate his way through, he's a good player, and I get clobbered and missed another Joust final 2 years in a row, or miss winning a Joust Worlds tournament 2 years in a row now, and this time it's because I handed the dude the deck list. He played it, and then he crushed me with it in the semifinal. Well, now you see why we just don't hand out deck lists anymore. It's not a good reason. It's not a good idea. It's going to slap you in the face.
But that was a competitive match, right? You played a competitive player with a competitive deck. Isn't that what you want? Competitive?
But with my own deck, I don't want to hand other people decks and have them slap me over the head with it.
I mean, when you said that Martell thing, you said, you know, I won this tournament with it, I did it, I shared the deck, and then I was facing it. Well, if you're facing it and then you are able to beat it, then you've become a better player because of it. And if you're not, then the whole meta as a whole starts to shift and become better around this higher point. It's essentially this gradual
you guys
raising
energy. And Eric's point, he wants people to be just good enough to recognize how good he was, but he doesn't want to be good enough to defeat. That's not what he wants.
But part of it. So part of it too. I guess Seth probably has a point buried down there somewhere. But I mean, so Seth is what, right. what annoys us the most. The lack of originality on the part of others is fine, right? Like in competitive games, net decking happens all the time. I grew up in my Star Wars years and became a decent player. I wouldn't say I was ever a good Star Wars player, but a decent one because I net decked and I understood and learned from the greats. But what really annoyed us in that those two situations, Alec did not go on the forums that year and credit the DC meta for having given him a deck list that handed him a card design. In those other situations with the Martell deck, people were not crediting us. They were just playing our deck, and, you know, for some reason that matters to us. And I don't know why that is. It's a really weird quirk.
No, I can understand
satisfied.
That. If I help someone with a deck, I love, you know, hearing that they say, oh, thanks a lot for helping me with that, or thanks a lot. Like, that's great.
And
I can understand that.
Even more than that, you guys notice that DC treats this as a team sport. We have from the beginning. We give props to each other where props are due. You will never hear a DC metamate going on a podcast and not giving his metamate props, not calling out the others by name and explaining how each of them was responsible for his or her win. It's the team environment, right? And so now all of a sudden we're giving away our deck lists and people aren't acknowledging us for them, which runs counter to this sort of team spirit that we've invested in so heavily. It's not entirely logical, but it is what it is. That's part of the problem. That's why we stopped.
To answer my answer to your question.
To answer your answer?
Can we answer my answer first?
Exactly.
My response to why don't we post deck lists right now, why do I not post deck lists after winning a tournament? Because I don't think the community that we have will ingest a good deck list properly. I think what will happen is that the very good players will take it and they will continue to be very good and they'll either play that deck or use it to become better. But the majority of players, there's so many misconceptions in the meta. People think that it's okay to play like 64 card decks. People think it's okay to play a bad card and say, oh, I'm just making a meta call. I don't want to put my deck out there, have it bastardized, and then help other already good players beat me. That doesn't really accomplish the goal.
Right, when it doesn't raise the skill of the noobs in the game. Once upon a time, I used to engage in forums wars. And time and time again, we learned this following lesson. Corey and I eventually just concluded that it wasn't worth posting in these things anymore. He never really did, but of course, I consulted him when I posted. It got so bad sometimes that he himself would weigh in, and it just to no effect, right? Bad players would continue raving on about bad card choices, bad decks, bad. there was no way to educate. And yet when you handed out lessons to the community that you expected would elevate the level of skill that you would, see brought to tournaments later, no, the bad players just don't seem to learn lessons in this community. They just continue to be bad. And the few out there at the time, you know, that was Jonathan and Greg, they would take that intelligence and prepare their game plans with it. We don't need to elevate their level of skill. They were already as good.
I think there's also another advantage to sharing decks. I don't agree with you guys. I think that the level of player skill does increase from playing with good cards and seeing what they can do, even if it's a straight net deck and they play my deck on Octagon and they see how it works, and they, even if they play it wrong, they'll see things that they didn't see before and they'll improve. They won't instantly become competitive players overnight. But I also like to see a deck that I've tweaked to great extent and 6 months later see a reimagining of it for the new meta because this deck has been out there. Because other people have gotten a chance to play with it. And that's been a lot of fun, too.
I take a lot of pride if I post a deck, someone takes it, tweaks it for their own meta, tweaks it for their own themselves. Maybe they add some what you would consider bad cards because they love those cards. Or maybe they take some of my bad cards out because my decks have bad cards.
And then they go win against a weak tournament field and are really proud.
I'm proud to watch my deck go through a tournament field, whether...
Six other people...
You're saying weak, yeah, but
you need higher standards for glory, my man.
I've watched some strong tournament fields. Like DC's a very strong meta, but I would put them up there with like the Swiss. Like I don't think your DC is hands above some of the other really strong metas that are in the worldwide.
I just give up.
John is confusing the Swiss with the Swedish, but
thank you. Yeah, the before. Swedish. I apologize. The Swedish.
Yeah. Seth, there's no point. They can't. Be
I think
educated.
There's one. If there's one sad thing about this community, it's that we're split across the Atlantic Ocean. I think some of the best players in the world are in Europe. I respect that. I totally recognize that. And it's just a shame that, you know, three of them or whatever get to come to Worlds and we don't go to Stalic. So there's no overlap. We don't really compete with the Europeans, and it's a shame.
Hey, we sent Sandy to Stalic.
he was with them in drinking.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he could at least hold his own on the booze front, but...
And again, we actually thought about giving Sandy, like offering him, like, do you want to play one of our DC decks? We talked to him about it.
Okay.
He didn't really want it.
I can't
but
even
also,
listen to this. I got
the issue is, okay, we give Sandy
one.
A great deck. He goes, if he plays it wrong, the conclusion people will draw is this deck is not good. People don't often understand how to read tournament results, how to use a tool like the Annals and say, like, okay, what do these results really mean? And
that I have to agree with. Seth is totally right, because once you make that cut, there is, you know, bad things can happen. Maybe Seth, you know, he's playing his Baron Maesters or his Dragon Pit or whatever it was, it doesn't matter. All he draws is locations, and that's the 0.00001%, but that thing can still happen, and
it does
then you lose that game in the cut, and everyone thinks, oh, your deck was bad. Your deck wasn't bad. You just got unlucky like son of a bitch, or sometimes, you know, like you said, Seth, earlier, there's those rock-paper matchups that, you know, you don't expect a certain archetype. Eric even said this, you know, he didn't expect Lannister at the tournament. It shouldn't have got through the cut if it would have played any of these other decks. But as happenstance was, it didn't play any of those decks. It played all its good matchups, and now you're sitting down looking across from your absolutely worst matchup, which, you know, only would appear in the top 16 1 in 100 times, and you lose to it. That's the way it is.
I think we as a community need to wean ourselves off of anecdotal evidence. I'm really afraid that what's going to happen 2.0 is there will be this Worlds tournament with core sets with 2.0 rules. And what's going to happen is some deck is going to win and people will be like, man, that must be the best deck. And it's like, no, that's just one.
Our addiction in this community to survivorship bias was not as much present in the Star Wars community. Things were more recognized for what they were back in that. And I don't know why that was, but it is an unfortunate thing. I agree with Seth in this one. The analysis, the quality of analysis over time, especially has been present on informs discussions, but also just seeing what people then show up to at tournaments. The analysis, the quality of analysis seems relatively poor in the community, and that's kind of been disappointing over time.
See, you left before I instigated the Annals of Castle Black.
What is this?
This is a spreadsheet for tournament results that breaks down houses and agendas by cuts and which
and restricted card
and
for all the major tournaments.
Ratio,
but
so.
it doesn't attempt to do some sort of I mean, immediately when I hear that, I'm like, okay, that's a bunch of information, but I would have to pay that. I would have to pair that with some sort of, for us to use it, it would be like we'd have to do some sort of Bayesian where the prize were people's ELO rankings or something, but we don't have that, right? Because every matchup is entirely dependent on the players who are sitting down and not really on the matchup, so that data doesn't seem on face to be particularly meaningful.
When you wind up with 1,500, 2,000 data points and you see that Lannister is making the cut twice as often as it is present.
Yeah, but cuts are relatively meaningless. I mean, we're talking about the variety.
I side with Eric here. The problem with the Annals is that it doesn't tell the difference between a 25-person tournament in New York with Dave Strom, Dan, Lauren Fitch comes down from Boston, and a 22-person tournament, you know, in some other place where players who don't play as much, maybe they're not as competitive as you would define it, and both of those results are equated in the Annals. And what I end up using the Annals for is just to scout other good players, see what they play, see what their restricted was. That's all I use it for, because there's so many data points, and they're not evaluated.
Anyone who has sat at Corey's kitchen table and witnessed what goes on would immediately conclude that this type of analysis is relatively worthless. Depending on which side of the table Corey is sitting on, that is the side that's winning every single game, no matter which side what decks are matched up where. And what's funny is that a lot of DC's testing actually goes on where Corey just plays against himself, which is, of course, the perfect matchup. The rest is inferior.
I have to agree somewhat that the people that you're testing with matter a lot. That you have to make sure that if you're testing decks, that the two people testing those decks are of equal caliber and strength. And actually, I believe that...
Yeah, or the results don't matter. And so that's why, with us, only Corey versus Corey is what matters, and that's how business gets done.
Well, that's not true, because you can give Corey a deck that is extremely complicated to play, and he'll play it perfectly.
Of course.
But you can't give anyone else. Like, there must be some people in your meta that aren't as advanced or haven't put in as much time as Corey, who couldn't take a deck that
there's
Corey
not
one. Pilot to victory.
Right. He shows us how to play them.
He shows. Okay. So, but what you just described right there is a lot of time investment. He shows you. He probably talks about different matchups. He gives you these hints. So people have to go to the class of Corey to get that. And in some metas, they
table.
Don't have that.
The kitchen table of champions is what it's called.
Okay. In some metas, they don't have a Corey. So what they have to do is they have to figure that out themselves. So they actually might take a deck that you wouldn't consider to be the best deck in the meta because maybe it's easier to play. And it's actually the correct choice for them at that time.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But it's essential that they recognize the limitations of the choice that they made, as opposed to thinking, this is the best deck. Right?
Seth, you have this fundamental belief, it seems, that people being wrong is this affront to nature.
I think Seth likes that.
Well, people not believing that DC's decks are the finest decks in the world is an affront to nature. But
No.
Well, John, what do you think about my comment on the Annals? How do you use the Annals, and what do you make of the data?
Yeah.
I use the Annals for similar reasons to you. I look at what the best players are playing. I look at the most common decks, and unlike you, I decide not to play those decks. But I have to make sure I can beat them.
But do you look at all the Annals results, and do you say Lanny is making the cut 40%? I think Lanny is the strongest house, or do you think it's maybe popular? What do you think when you see that?
No, for me, it's definitely popular. But
yeah,
that
popular,
means that
okay.
I need that if I'm testing my deck, it needs to beat Lanny.
But
that's
also,
all
right, fair enough. Those
might
show
me restricted cards too, right? Like if everyone's running Fear of Winter, then I probably need to be like if 60% of decks right now are running Fear of Winter. Maybe I need to think about that for the next tournament. Like, it's a good meta call. Right?
So if you're using it as, you know, your source of meta intelligence, I guess, rather than attempting to divine what's good and bad in the environment, then yeah, that sounds like a great use for something like that.
Now, we were talking a little bit about elevating the opponents, and we talked a little bit about deck sharing, and we talked a little bit about the annals. Attorney reports, for instance, is something that DC does do, especially recently. They talk about the matchups and that kind of thing, and that
we know, just like attention.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it is just you know,
we do. My, how far horn. We've slipped.
But there is something that John mentioned that I think DC has done very, very well in elevating the level of play of certain people, and that is be the villains. Be the people to beat. And John, maybe you want to go into more detail
there? Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, Eric. When I was playing you, my first time I ever played and lost, like, you know, the first time I showed up at Nationals was the first year I played. I lost to you. And the next year I said, I got to crush this Eric Botsloff guy. He's going to have to die. I played you in the Swiss. I beat you. I was so happy right until you crushed me in the cut. But, I mean, before that, that was my happiness. You don't remember the Balerion kneeling all your guys and you just not drawing your Gaston Grey and you crying inside?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was terrible. That was so painful to sit through. Oh, man.
So, but it made me feel happy, and it was because you were the villain, and DC was the villain. And, you know, at Worlds that year, when you guys, like, Eric, I know you were pulled aside specifically from some FFG employees and said, you know, you guys have to stop playing as a team in Melee. And you're like, okay, we'll do what we can. And then later got disqualified. I mean, that was awesome because, like, sad for the community, but awesome in the fact that, to me, it vilified you, and the villain actually got a whole bunch of players in my area playing harder and actually wanting to become a team because they wanted to team up, not because they wanted to be a team.
Oh, well, God, this is great.
Because they wanted to beat DC. And that actually raised the level of competition. Like, it didn't raise it to a DC level, but it was the first step. So I think Game of Thrones needs a DC. It needs someone to pull people together, to have a goal. Even if that goal isn't to win a tournament, it's just to beat DC.
And so we had always hoped, you know, so, I mean, it's definitely true that we have been at times purposefully villainous, right? Big surprise. And that's sort of what we had always hoped to spur. Our first big set of rivals was the Missouri meta, they test closely together and they're very good friends, but they're not a team, they don't play like a team. And it was always sort of at least my hope that one day, you know, the Greg and Zyler would sit down at a Melee table and just crush together rather than, no, and you would just never see that, right? That was sort of disappointing. Team play elevates the level of skill within, I mean, that's sort of the DC philosophy for training. I think that the reason we've been so successful at producing three, maybe four, depending on how you count, incredibly successful generations of players is because from generation one to two and then on, we imparted this team mentality where we train as a team, we play as a team, we collude in Melee as a team, or whatever.
Well, there was no collusion rules when you and Corey did it. Like, there was no rules against it.
All right, we created the collusion
rule. The tale is that Eric sat down at the table and said, this is Corey Faraday. He's going to be the world Melee champion. Just try and stop us.
That's not at all how it was.
That's the story.
I think the story was something like Greg approached Corey before the tournament, knowing that I was hopeless. Greg approached Corey before the game and asked whether or not Corey would play it straight up. And Corey was just like, I'll see what I can do. That, by the way, was the most satisfying tournament game of any game. Any card game, any time I've ever played in my whole life. It was nothing but a pleasure to dump to my best friend a game and give him card designs. Like, it was the most satisfying feeling I've ever experienced. The moment where we crossed the line from, you know, we're colluding, but we don't want to make a show of it, to openly, Corey, at some point he said, Eric, play that plot that we had almost taken out this morning. When we crossed the line from, you know, trying to obfuscate slightly to just being open, that was like the most satisfying, elating feeling I have experienced in a game of any card game before.
I don't know if I can continue with this whole colluding thing because it makes me horribly sad. So,
I ask you, Alex, do you think that DC has been the villain the past year?
No. Well, yes and no, in that there's been some artificial inflation towards that because of past history. So
that's
people
true.
Still look at the group and see it in that way. There are a lot of ways in which DC has changed. There are some new players. There are some different approaches. For instance,
Eric, who was
I just think we haven't had the respect. I don't think we've had the respect to be the villain.
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think there's also other things that have changed that have made you less villainous. You know, just take Gen Con this year. Not everyone was playing the same deck. It didn't look like people were approaching it specifically as a team. You know, it wasn't. They weren't playing different decks so that some of them could screen the other decks or anything like that, as far as anyone could tell.
The decks weren't as surprising this year as previous years either. I mean, DC brought the decks that everyone expected DC to bring. If they had, you know, surprised us like in previous generations, I think it gets more talk and that makes you more of a villain.
Yeah, well, you might be right, just getting attention.
Yeah, I mean, there are other aspects.
It just gets more attention.
To getting attention, too. I mean, even if you all bring the same deck and there are 20 of you, there aren't. But, you know, if there are 20 of you in a field of 80, then you've biased the meta simply by being a large enough group. And that's not something that requires skill, if you can see the difference, right?
But it takes skill. So remember what we were talking about earlier. For us, it's the whole process that brings us satisfaction. And part of that process
But it wouldn't
is,
if there were 80 out of 80 that were DC.
No. Part of the process is roping together a team to sort of bring the heat like that. Like, that's part of the satisfaction. When we show up with 8 guys, we fully know and expect to take advantage of the fact that 8 individuals who are well-trained and competent playing the same deck is far more likely, of course, to cause that deck to be propelled to the, and then someone gets a card design. That's all part of like the whole process for us is part of the satisfaction. For us, it's fun doing that. It's great showing up and giving 8 people the same deck, or in this last Gen Con, apparently it was 2 different decks. Both of which were extremely well honed,
Four, and just, depending on how you count Kid and.
Yeah,
and,
sure, right. So well, on, yeah. They played their own thing, you know. The team has sort of fissured slightly in recent years, but. Corey just doesn't provide sufficient glue to hold them all together. But
he doesn't whip them like you used to, Eric.
No, he
None
doesn't.
Of them had scars this year. I saw all their backs, no scars. Very, very upset.
Yeah, I've given him shit about that, but he's just not quite willing to take it that far.
If you think a villain is important, I have one comment to make, which is that the past 2 World Championship Joust events, the top 4 have been only European players and DC players. In 2013, it was Steve and Chad Jamnik, and Alvaro obviously beat Steve, and then the most recent year was Sam Bratz, 3 Europeans, and Sam won. So I want to see some other American metas break in there in this top 4 and help us defeat the European scourge.
Yeah, that would be sweet, but man, I don't know at this rate. I just don't see that happening.
Well, you're going to step up though, right, Eric? You're going to go to Worlds this year and play in the last 1.0 tournament?
Even if I did, I'm washed out.
You can't get good now?
That's what Bruno says every year, right before he wins. All right. Well, that was competitive play. That was competitive players, competitive decks, bad players, the villain.
Yeah, just there are some cards that are better in decks than others, absolutely. Whether or not you can identify those, well... I like this. As I'm just scrolling through this thread trying to find like a final quote here. Here I find a good old Will Lentz. Will Lentz says in this thread, he never changes. Or the question that I you know, if I'm going to talk about this game one last time in public, I may as well take my old dear acquaintance Will Lentz and piss him off one last time. Or the question that pops into my mind is, where's the criteria for what's objectively bad? I mean, I don't recall seeing a list around anywhere. Or a formula that I could apply to determine such things. Well, I mean, there are such formulas. Will was never able to find them, though. They do exist, we promise.
All right, closing comments, John. What are the plans for the cast in next little while? What tournaments are coming up?
Well, tournament-wise, I mean, everyone should be waiting for an FAQ, because we're probably going to see one in, what, the next 3 weeks?
I would think 3 weeks is probably a reasonable date. I wouldn't be stunned if it was a week later than that.
Yeah.
Well, no, 3 weeks sounds right. 3 weeks sounds right. There is a tournament next week. Greek Nationals is happening. So that's something to keep in mind. That's the 26th and the 27th.
We're going to have a new segment on the cast with Seth Lowe from DC is going to take a look at people's decks and tell us if they have bad cards in them. We're going to make sure that he says it in a nicer way than he normally does or punish him horribly on the show each and every time.
I don't think we necessarily need to. I mean,
we'll see what happens.
The point is not for the entire segment to be, I'm going to say, dickish, but the point is for it to be combative.
And so, Seth will bring that.
Exactly. Seth will bring that, and we'll appreciate it.
So if you actually want your deck picked apart by Seth on the cast, post it on AGOT cards and say, Beyond the Wall, please take a look at my deck. And we will take Seth on and be ready, because he is not going to be kind and tell you why you have bad cards in your deck.
So, John, that's you volunteering to scour all the AGOT card decks for ones that are labeled for us to look at them?
If the title says, look at this Beyond the Wall, or just Beyond the Wall, yeah, I guarantee it'll come on the show.
Okay, you guaranteed it, not I.
Yep. Okay, seriously, you don't check the feed every day?
I do, I just don't check the deck list every day.
Yeah, but the title has to have Beyond the Wall in it.
Yeah, but the titles can get edited and then you don't, I don't know.
Beyond the Wall in the title.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
There's
a lot worse cards.
And moaning about just Frozen Solid and how it's an answer card and you never play answers. It's not just an answer card.
He doesn't like to see his black sails Frozen Solid. That's the god's untrue. His dream is to win a championship with black sails, and he doesn't like anything that stops that. He'll tell you dry season's bad. Anything that stops black sails is bad.
It's true, guys. He's going to attempt to run some propaganda campaign anytime he can.
It's a good thing I really like King's Law as a plot.
King's Law is bad. If it doesn't do well with black sails, it's bad.